Always great to see you, Jimmy. Triple Premiership player, Norm Smith, medalist, Brownlow medalist. By God, he's handsome. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Daniel. I really enjoyed your gentleman's measured conversation on the way in here about David McKay.
I'm keen for your take on this because you have been a part of this process, James.
I have, and you have as well. You've been the one who it's been referred to.
Yes.
I've been part of when it was a panel to decide whether to send it to the tribunal. I just want to know what's being announced this week. Are we moving grand final time? Is there a new rule change? Have we got an expansion team in Tasmania?
What do you mean?
Well, it's almost PR 101. Yeah, what's going on
what's
over here?
Yeah. Look at this hand.
Can someone look at something while we slide something else in? Because I'm with you, half. Okay, this is ridiculous. How the fact that your sole purpose and job is to grade incidents and you can't grade it? We'll just pack it up then. Seriously.
Well, I'm with you.
Heck, you cannot send someone to the tribunal without a grading. So, I'm with you. What are we doing here? Are we just... pie warmer.
Well, they get nice pies. In the old days, before there was grading, you were going to the tribunal for striking or tripping
or whatever
it was. He's going to the tribunal for
he's not quite
for
sure.
The sake of going.
He's not quite sure.
So
I'd be telling him to jam it. Until you charge me, I'm not going.
One of the greatest goal kickers of all time, Plugger, ran at about 70%.
He's good.
Kicking, accuracy?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Kicking efficiency is about 60 to 70%. Umpires make mistakes. They've made a mistake. You don't get them all right. So I'm just saying that, this is the 3 and the 10 from Steve Hocking and his man, Michael Christian.
Yeah, well, I would say that they go better than 70%. I reckon that they're pretty good.
I'm just saying that there's mistakes and it happens at all. That we make mistakes here. We call wrong players' names. We get things wrong.
I did that once.
Yep.
Whitey,
I've never done
Friday.
Whitey
on Friday.
But
most Fridays at the moment.
Can I just highlight a few points? I'll get them all out there.
Get them out.
And then you guys can address them.
Okay. One by one.
One by one. I've
written them down.
I have.
Impressive.
Research.
Nice writing.
Research.
Not just a suburb.
That's not a suburb. You like my writing?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
My mum hated it. School teacher.
No, I like it.
She didn't think I should have ever got my pen license.
I should not comment on writing. Yeah.
No, you should not. You are horrible.
Hey.
Unfeelings. Sorry, that was aggressive.
Under the principles of someone getting hurt because of your actions on the football field, well, then Lockie Henderson needs to be at the tribunal.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Hey, I didn't go through the points.
Sorry, I'm aggressive.
Write that down.
I've got decent handwriting.
Because that means someone was concussed in a football act. So that means Lockie Henderson, we'll see you up there. We don't know what we're charging you with, Lockie, but can you go along as well? Because we've got the pie warmer warmed up, and I want to put 24 on. At the moment, we can only eat 12. For people who want to make this their flag in the ground as far as concussion and get it out of the game, I completely understand and agree with it. You will not get a bigger supporter of looking after players' heads, concussion, the long-term health benefits, because I'm a player who's gone through a number of concussions. So you're not going to get a bigger supporter. But this is not the hill to die on for it. This is not the incident or the act to do it on, because you can't have the same people jumping up and down on it then 2 days later, then critique a player or a team for not going hard enough. So you can now, for the rest of the season and years on, never critique a player about going hard enough.
Correct.
Because
he's trying to talk.
I'm agreeing.
Shut up, mate.
Because you
let him finish.
You're suspending a player on still frames. You actually have now isolated this incident for. Oh, what else could have you done? I defy anyone to go back 15 metres, run as hard as you can and make a decision. That is not. There can be accidents, and Whitey, I heard you on the way in, there can be accidents in the game of football. Now, very worst, and we're going back to football and non-football half, you and I are going to be the founding fathers of this. We're Burke and Wills. if it classified as a football act, well, then at very worst, he gets a fine. And then you can, if he comes back again for the same incident, then we're looking for suspensions. Now, the fact that they've handed it to the tribunal again, we've gone... And my last point before I'll open the floor to you, gentlemen, is don't get caught up with comparing incidents. You'll become the most frustrated human being in the world if you watch football and you go, well, this guy punched this guy in the head and this guy got that, so he got 2 weeks. So McKay has to go because this guy got that. Just look at David McKay. Don't look for anything. Don't have a lens of, he concussed him. Don't have a lens of he was just playing football. Just look at it and grade it in real time. And then if you have to still frame to check where he made contact, that's the only time you do still frames. Now, floor is yours. I got that off my chest.
Adam, you wanted to agree. Rama, you were trying to agree with a lot of that.
Do you want to see my notes?
You hear coaches, you hear commentators say that team was harder for longer. It's a lot of time. They're harder for longer. You're taking out that aspect of the game. You won't ever be able to criticize a player. You're right, Jim, for he didn't go hard enough at the ball.
Yep.
Well, then my reason I didn't go hard, I thought I was going to hurt him.
I could have hurt him.
Yeah, I could have hurt him. I could go to the tribunal. I could miss 4 weeks. So I just thought I'll let him get the ball.
It's the most unusual. Your Henderson and Todd Marshall line is very, very good in this, because there was an incident where a player was concussed in a contest, similar to what happened to David McKay and Hunter Clark. In other words, it wasn't concussed, just got a broken jaw. Slightly different, but a head clash and trauma nonetheless. And there's been no conversation that Lachie Henderson's liable for that contact.
He didn't say it. Shouldn't have even been a free kick against Lachie Henderson to start with.
Because sometimes there are collisions in a collision game. You're quite right, Jim.
But Daniel, this is the thing that I think gets lost in all of this, because there will be people thinking that David McKay bumped.
He didn't.
He didn't bump.
That's the fundamental difference.
And so this is the whole thing, is that this is why it is a collision, or it is an accident, because he was aggressively going to attack the ball.
Yes.
And as a result of that, someone got injured. But we can't have a situation where there's any commentary or people thinking, oh, but David McKay bumped, so he chose to bump, so there's head or eye contact, there needs to be a suspension. If that was the case,
yes,
he would be suspended.
And we would all say that is fair.
That's right. But in this situation, this isn't the case. He was aggressively attacking the ball and trying to go to a contest and protect himself as he went, because he did turn to protect himself. That is what you're meant to do.
You're not going to go in and just open yourself up to get smashed to smithereens.
But there are players that do that. There are players that do go in. Now, whether it's because of the sliding rule where people poke their head out because they're not prepared to go in lower and all these sorts of things, I think there's an argument for that as well. But we do have situations now where players, like a turtle, they put their head out to either milk a free kick or they don't attack the contest properly. Now, I feel I shouldn't be talking about this because you three have played the game, but it's common sense sort of stuff, this conversation.
But Huff and I have been talking about this issue for some time. Once you're able to have front-on contact and other free kicks that are associated with that, with high, as you're talking about, that the art of don't put your head where your backside belongs has left the game. So that's why you have players running around, like, hands out, face first, there's the ball, still a metre away, and we have these instances. Now, I think we've gotten a lot better, and I agree, protect the head at all cost. So people are going to go, oh, you don't get it, it's bigger picture. I get it. I'm one of those people who
wore a helmet to start your career.
I did. I wore a helmet in underage football because they thought that could have helped.
Yep.
Now, that's another discussion about helmets, where they help make concussion worse. That's a different discussion. We can go down that rabbit hole another day. But this is not the incident to put the flag in the ground with. I've banged the table there.
You have banged the table. Off the SMS, Krasa says, McKay jumped at the last second, turned his shoulder into Clark's head. No, he didn't.
No, he didn't. And once contact was made, the force of that lifted him.
Correct. Lifted him. And I'm watching it again as we
Dave McKay is playing for his career every week at the moment. So
he's had a long career.
239 games.
He's been a good player.
239 games.
He's been a very
good
player for the Crows.
That's a sneaky, I was surprised by that.
But now it's a week-to-week proposition whether he's in the team or not. So if he doesn't go for that ball, Matthew Nixon turns around and says, should have gone a bit harder, you know.
But it's even simpler than that, Ram, I reckon. You're entitled to attack that contest. Sure. That's a 50-50 ball. Sure. You're entitled to compete for that. Doesn't matter if it's your first game, your 100th game, you're a Brownlow medalist, you're no good. You're entitled to compete for that ball.
If that's inside forward 50 and Hunter Clark takes the ball and kicks a goal and St Kilda win the game, we're going at Dave McKay a million miles per hour.
So what happens, right? And this is a hypothetical. So you're running back with a flight of the ball, Rammer. Mm-hmm. In fact, you wouldn't have
very
done
rare.
That.
Very rare.
No, let's flip it.
He was hard, man.
Because he wouldn't have done that. So, Jim, you're running back with a flight of the ball because you're a courageous player. and the ball's in the air, it's a kick mark situation.
Yes.
You're running back at the flight of the ball, Rammer's coming from the opposing angle, and you both launch at the footy. He gets up slightly, just a 1/600th of a second faster than you, and marks the ball in the chest. His elbow clubs you in the chops, and you break your jaw, and you're actually concussed on this one, Jim, as you come back down. You're courageous.
Hits his head on the ground.
Hits your head in the ground. Yeah. Is Rammer liable for that?
Well, this is
because that's the situation. Yeah, this is a ground ball version of that. And why would a ground ball version be different to an aerial contest?
Oh, you're not getting any disagreement.
I just think that's the rabbit hole. You talk about rabbit holes.
Yeah,
that's the rabbit hole we end up getting into if we get to this point.
I'd love Adelaide to come out today and demand from the AFL what has Dave McKay been charged with.
Yeah, that's why I was making a joke at the start.
They can't do that now.
Well, you can't now.
It's been sent to the tribunal with no charge.
They're still going to ask. What? Like you said earlier this morning, what are we actually defending him?
Well, I'm telling him to jam it. I'm not going.
With the final one on this, from my perspective anyway.
Seems you want to shut this down.
Well, no, because...
it's going to be an interesting, fascinating couple of days.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Should have you got a free kick or not? Or is it play on?
Play on.
Look, you know, it's clearly high context. We see it now, but it was impossible to see it's at the time. On. It looked like just a genuine contest at the time, in real time.
Yes, but knowing what you know now,
you can't umpire 15 minutes later through the video screen. Of course you can't,
Daniel. But I'm saying is that if you, knowing what the evidence that you know, should have he got a free kick for it for high contact?
No, I still just don't think it's a free kick.
Yeah. Okay.
Play on.
No, because I think that's important because. I agree with you. I tend that while there was head high contact, or what we've discussed from a reporting situation, but if it's also not a free kick situation, it only further emphasises the point that it was an accident where it was not incidental, or almost was incidental contact because people were both going for the ball at the same time.
We'll see. Surely the ploughman suspension is relevant, says someone off the SMS as well. No, that's absolutely not relevant. That was a bump.
This is where you'll get frustrated.
Don't do that to yourself. Don't do that to yourself. Jimmy's asked you not to do that.
It's a public holiday. I want you to enjoy your public holiday.
Stay in your pajamas.
That is a different contest.
No, because you will. You'll do your head in. Seriously, comparing...
If you want to compare one, can I just give you an out?
No, I don't
want to give you an out. I want to give you Harbrow Gibbons.
You're not giving me that. I don't want it.
Well, I just gave it to you. Just for free.
Jammy gift. I told you. Listen.
You can have Harbrow and Gibbons. You can't have
your ears painted on, mate.
Yeah, they may or may not be painted on.
It was a great game. It felt like a heavyweight battle. And for the boys to do what they did in the end, both teams, I think, looked pretty tired towards the end there. Our crowd really helped. 50,000, it was a great response from our players in the last 10 minutes. We hung in there. Probably Richmond overall played a bit better than us for the four quarters, but when it mattered most, I thought we made the most of it.
That's the voice of Adam Simpson, the coach of the West Coast Eagles. They were victorious in round 13 over the Richmond, last night at Optus Stadium. 50,000 people. There's a fair bit of noise going on in that venue as well. It is a fantastic venue when there's a crowd. 85-81. They were 22 points down the last quarter, Jim. The Tigers went bang, bang, bang to start the last quarter. And normally, that's curtains for anyone. But the West Coast Eagles on that night, last night, said, not for mine. What'd they do? How'd they do it?
they stuck to their game plan, their game style. That was just two competing game styles. You could probably walk away with both sides. Richmond, they were absolutely fantastic. They did a bit of West Coast to West Coast. They possessed the footy, especially across half-back. They took a lot of marks as well. Both sides had over 100 marks, and we talk about that a lot in here, that if you're able to mark the footy, you're able to win that territory game. I heard you, Whitey, earlier. They were able to... What West Coast were able to do different in the last quarter was they were actually able to take those marks, taking the game forward. And I know we referenced that a bit, but it becomes a territory game. So you're able to set up really high with your defence. We saw Barras in the last quarter marking the ball up near centre wing instead of deep in his 50. So it was where the game was played in that last 15 minutes in particular. And the advantage West Coast has got, and Richmond, because has been fantastic, is these two sides, if they get territory on you, they're pretty safe. They don't get scored against. But then if they do score, they've got good centre bounce ruckman. So then they win the territory quickly again when you're all set up. So for West Coast, that's why they play this possession game. And they just take territory off you And they've got three tall forwards who can pluck everything, and Flying Ryan, who can, you know, jump the height of the point post. It's unbelievable. So then they can go there. Probably the difference is the competing styles. We know Richmond can play that chaos or dirty ball.
Yep.
Inside forward 50, where West Coast is a marking team inside forward 50. So West Coast marked 15 balls inside forward 50, which is a lot against the Tiggies. But it was just a moments thing. Like, you think Waterman's goal from 50, yep. Oscar Allen's goal from 50, and
Josh Kennedy.
The great Josh Kennedy. We need to celebrate this guy a little bit more. He's extraordinary.
Your point about the marks is interesting. I don't think there'd be too many games I've ever seen where both teams have 110 marks.
No.
Plus, 112 to 113.
So was Richmond forced to play like that because of the way West Coast was playing, or did they come in with a bit of a different style to try and combat West Coast?
I think they took what was on offer to them.
Yeah.
So I don't think that was a deliberate ploy, and they might come out and say, yeah, we wanted to possess it. But it just looked like West Coast, the way they folded back a little bit in defence early.
You mark the ball back with a centre. We're happy with that.
Yeah. You can knock them around. Whereas
Shorten, Hooley got a lot of the footy.
Yeah. You mark it back there. We're happy with that. Yeah. You just keep it there because that doesn't allow then your flow and your run. Yeah. So, two players enormous for West Coast in the last quarter. Shannon Hearn, his intercept possessions, particularly in the back half, he stopped. I think he stopped three goals.
Yeah, the Castagna and the Martin kick-out goal were marked by Hearn in the square.
That Martin one, I know it was going offline, but if you actually look at his positioning when Martin was taking the shot, it was still proactive without being, reckless. It was, he had his man covered, but as soon as Martin turned the other way, you're not getting the footy there, and just peeled off. Strong mark.
The beauty of Shannon Hearn is because he's so composed with the ball. Once he took those intercept marks, he didn't just then bomb the ball.
No,
he went and hit a target, and that then was able to get West Coast flowing. The other one who I love was Luke Edwards. The young boy. He's had 11 possessions in the last quarter. You didn't expect that from a kid so young. No. But he was enormous in the last quarter.
He was part of that last scoring chain as well.
But that kick he kicked inside to Oscar Allen, that is so hard to kick. I think we all brushed over it because, you know, the height of the game and the emotion of it. But just outside 50, off a turnover with a lot of defence, he just had that composure. You could see him just go, wait for it to unfold, and just a nice way to kick.
Because his weight was going to the boundary, and he was able to squeeze it sort of away. So what I wanted to ask you, from what Damien Hardwick said after the game, he talked about how his team didn't have composure with the ball and that rushing. Why did that happen? Because it's not something you often see from the Tigers, because it was two parts to it. It was the kick, trying to get it outside defensive 50. You know, Vlosten turned it over. There's a couple of others. But then also, late in the game, not so much the Martin one, but there was that other one where Castagna had players on its outside.
That's right. There's times they'll just hit up that target.
They would not normally panic like that. So is that just Richmond off, or is that did West Coast do anything
noise,
to them?
That's noise in the crowd. That's pressure from West Coast.
But Richmond usually can combat that.
I agree, but it happens to the best.
Yeah, they had a bit of an off night. They were actually off throughout the night. It wasn't just the moment. I think early they turned a couple over that we're not used to seeing, but it's kind of the bar that they've set. Yeah, you know, if that was another side, we probably wouldn't even think about it, but they've only lost by 4 points, and it was a 40-metre snap from Kennedy.
What were they up, 22, 23 points? They can usually shut the game down and turn it into almost boring.
Yep.
But to West Coast credit, they continued to attack.
And what they did well is they took the ball. Once they got to the Toyota logos, that kick, even though it doesn't look sexy at the time, just off the line, inside the corridor, they showed a couple of times on the footage last night where Broad or Grimes, they're the middle gatekeeper in that defensive zone. That's a decision where, I have to come up. So we saw a couple of times Josh Kennedy getting the ball when he was just outside forward 50. Because that kick was corridor, that spare defender has to come up, but he's caught in no man's land.
Yep.
And then then the next one was just a little bit off the line. I think Cripps got a couple of them on the 45. So you got to be brave. You got to be willing to turn a but if you turn a couple over, not go gun shy for the rest of the game.
You ready for my stat?
Just take your time with it.
We should have really nailed this. Take your time. Delivery is important here.
It is.
We want to understand it.
I'm nervous.
We want to understand it.
So the two grand final teams from last year, Geelong and Richmond, have played seven matches against teams currently inside the top eight.
So they played all other seven.
So Geelong, its record is 4 wins and 3 losses.
4-3 Geelong. Yep. 4-3.
4-3. That's Geelong 4-3.
Hey, come on.
Richmond have played 7 games against the current top 8. 4-3. And they are 1 win, 6 losses.
1-6, Richmond. Ooh. 1-6.
Take that for data. Yeah.
So they currently sit 7-6 overall. But obviously, 7-6 overall,
flat track bullies been
against the bottom 10. Right. No, I'm not saying that, but are we almost at a point where there is a pattern developing, or is it just that because of the injuries that they've had? Because clearly they've had an unhealthy list for most of the year, and in 2019 they were 7-6 and went on to win the premiership when they got their players back. So I'm not saying that they're gone. But is there enough of a sample to think, well, geez, you know what? You've actually got to be better against the top 8 teams, because their only win was against the Dogs, where they looked really vulnerable in that game in the first half.
So this is Richmond's back end of the season. St Kilda, Gold Coast, Collingwood.
Win, win, win. But not top 8.
So that's Whitey's point.
Then Brisbane and Geelong.
Brisbane at home and Geelong. Geelong.
Then Fremantle, North Melbourne.
Win.
North Melbourne. GWS, Richmond. So they've got two teams.
They play themselves.
Hawthorn.
Intra-club.
He said Richmond.
Oh, did I? Sorry. Yeah, sorry. And then they play Hawthorn last round. So they've got two teams in the 8 for their final 9.
So if we were to give them all of those games outside of Brisbane and Geelong, yep, and give them one of those two,
15.
That gives them top a 15-7. And I reckon that'll miss top 4.
I reckon that gets you 4th.
It might.
I'm still not concerned about the Tigers.
No,
I like the fact they're coming. West Coast at Optus Stadium. Elliot Yeo makes such a difference to the West Coast, because they're getting their soldiers back. And we've talked about them through the year too, Whitey, that without Shuey and Yeo and those guys, Kelly have been out for a long time.
McGovern.
They're a different team. McGovern. Forgot about Big McGovern. Yeah. So I'm less worried about Richmond than I am loving what West Coast are doing with their players back. I want to see them full strength. We all want to see the best teams with the best players. That's a given, I think. But I'm not worried about the Tigers.
So Richmond have Asprey, Prestia, Lynch and Nankervis to come back.
Yeah, so they've still got 17 or 18 premiership players out there playing last night. So yes, they have injuries, but I don't think it was quite as bad as what it was earlier in the year and what it has been previous years. I'm not giving up on Richmond by any stretch of the imagination. But those numbers could be considered concerning.
I think the better teams are just starting to work out Richmond how to play.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is there a bit of because teams don't win 4 premierships in an era.
The Sydney game early was significant about that launch zone, and the Geelong game in the second half, speed. Geelong just went at Richmond, went at them with speed, went at them with power, and teams have looked at it. You look at West Coast, like last quarter, speed.
So speed Melbourne, on the did game. Melbourne did that as well, didn't they?
They did. It bit down
that game, but Geelong particularly.
So for those playing at home, just the other ones, because I've done them all, just because I have.
So what thing?
Because the reason I say this is that we criticise Port Adelaide saying they need a scalp, and we were talking about this on Friday morning.
I've never said that.
I have.
Yeah. Well, we've said that because Port Adelaide haven't won a premiership.
No, that's exactly
that's
right.
Richmond have won three of them.
That's right. But Port Adelaide have played 5 in the top 8. And are 1 win and 4 losses.
Yep. So they got a scalp.
So their scalp was Richmond.
Oh, there you go.
So, good scalp.
So yeah, good scalp. Yeah. Triple premiership.
But is it? Because they're 1-7 Richmond season.
Yeah, but they're 3 times premiership. Yeah,
1-6.
I think Campbell's come up with these.
So
what's Brisbane's?
Brisbane's is 2-3.
Yeah. Ooh. Melbourne's or whatever it is.
4-0.
Yeah. Oh, that's a clean scalp.
Four.
So that's anti-dandruff.
That's what the form letter said. They haven't played anyone.
There's two parts about this. They haven't played anybody. West Coast is 2-2. From 4. So that means they've got a lot more to play against top 8 teams. So that's why I think West Coast win was very important last night. I mentioned Geelong 4-3. Sydney are 3-1, but they've lost to 4 teams outside the top 8. Bulldogs are 3-2. I think that's all of them.
So we're pretty even.
Take that for data.
Well, what about this stat? The rest of them are quite even, but there's something to stand out.
Since 2017, Richmond are 54-0 when they score 84 points or more. Last night they scored 80 two or one?
Yeah, 81.
That was on 81.
That was on the screen.
Well, I'm just giving you the data.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
So they need to score 84 points
through pen and notepad stuff.
I'm not stressed about the Tigers. I'm liking what the West Coast Eagles did. The fact that they came back from 22 points down against Richmond, which they're is not an easy thing to do, says they've got a bit of appetite still. Yes. And the 1-6 for the Tigers, or 1-7 for the 1-6 for the Tigers, if I'm Damien Hardwick, stuck on the board.
Here you go, boys.
There's your next challenge.
Yep.
We've got two coming up.
Yeah, there's your next challenge.
I think we can give them the next three, which would make them 10-6. We might be having a different conversation. Maybe, or maybe not, because the top eight record doesn't change.
Just maybe we need a whiteboard in here for you, so we write things
up. A whitey board.
We're
sailed out.
That's terrific, James.
Hey, Huff, while we're at it, can we sing Richmond's praises about their depth of their list and things like that? And the Swans and their development of players who are picked 958 off the rookie list comes in, being an All-Australian defender. The Swans seem to do that. West Coast, Foley, Edwards, Oscar Allen, Brander, their development of young players.
Yep.
Xavier O'Neill's been sitting there. He's in and out of the side, but he's a solid player when he comes in. Their development of players is first class.
Agree. They're doing good things. They're a good team. They're a good club.
Yep.
And you say, they find players that are sort of outside the beautiful sort of top 10 draft picks or that sort of thing. Develop players.
They go for Western Australians a lot of the time.
Yes. Who are happy to stay home and develop and be
part of it. What number was Barras in the draft? He wasn't
He wouldn't have been too high.
I'll tell you that.
From reports. Ramo will get us that. And we'll move on from the West Coast at Richmond game, which was a...
43 in the 2013 draft.
He's a good player for 43. He's a very good player for 43. Let's go to Blunston Arena yesterday.
No.
Gentlemen.
Yes.
No.
You know what happened yesterday?
You tell us what happened yesterday.
The Josh Kelly... was just flirting with North Melbourne the whole game, going, yeah, I know you want me. Stop I'm just going to play the best game I've played maybe ever. And just to say, if you want me still, just pay me a lot.
He had his nightclub shoes on yesterday. Yeah. He was just dancing.
And you know what the problem was?
The
with
white snakeskins.
Yeah. Yeah.
And while that was going on, the Giants were drunk, hitting on other women. And Kelly's going, maybe I should change.
Yeah. Well, in the end, he doesn't know what to do. Because we had a draw, and they came back from 28 points down at three-quarter time. The Kangas were fantastic.
Awesome, they were.
Fantastic, they were. That third quarter was terrific. Set the game up for them, 4-0. And they would have gone into three-quarter time thinking, yep, we can do this, we can do this.
Yep, they would have got the song North Melbourne.
Toby Green and Josh Kelly had different ideas.
They did.
Jim, and their last quarter was brilliant.
Good move to move Toby into the midfield held across half forward. Yeah. The issue, again, with the Giants is uncontested marks. North Melbourne are able to win the contest, get that release pressure. Whenever pressure was on them, they would just get that little release squeeze kick. And I know I say it again, it doesn't look sexy and things like that, but it's the knock-on effect. And we talk about Melbourne, and we talk about Richmond. They understand if you're able to take out that little pressure valve kick, Geelong did it, actually I've been doing a lot lately as well, is the pressure it puts on you around the contest and then forces you to quick kick it down the line, and sides are then able to rebound and you play that front half game. So it just seems something really minor actually then has a massive compounding effect on the rest of your team. And I think North Melbourne were excellent. Ben Cunnington.
It's interesting that they didn't put any time into him.
You can put time into Ben Cunnington and you'll just put his... Put the palm of his hand in your chest.
At centre bounds, Cal Ward was all over him. But Cunnington is so strong. Nine clearances pushed him away. But five of those were centre clearances. Yeah.
But it's more than that. It's the general play congestion scrimmage where he just punches someone in the head with his hand and just gets him out of the way. It's quite remarkable.
He initiates... the contact.
And he wants it, doesn't he?
Because what
come,
he does...
And then I'll get it out tomorrow.
Yeah, he creates the overlap himself. So if you're not going to come at me, I'll come at you.
Yep.
Because what I'll do is I'll draw one to you.
Which creates a space.
Yeah, and then I've normally got my one on my hip. So there's the outnumber already. And the person then receiving the footy can square their shoulders. They've got a bit more time to kick the footy.
What caught the Giants off guard a little bit yesterday was North Melbourne coming back through the middle of the ground.
Mm.
And... The Giants just didn't protect the centre corridor. So North, obviously in their development stage, probably aren't moving the ball as crisp as other teams. But yesterday they were able to score through the middle of the ground. So I love that. I love that little subtle change from David Noble about they were trying to maintain possession in the first half of the season a lot with those short kicks and marks. But yesterday, have a go.
So that highlights my point, Rammer, and it's not just a Giants thing, but Si's probably in that part of the ladder do it as well, is you can come back through the middle if you've got time and space or you've got that first release. Now, the good sides don't allow you to come back through the middle because they actually don't give you the opportunity to come back through the middle. So they don't give you a chance to get back off the mark with that little, half you're coming at me. Yeah, you're applying that frontal pressure. I see Rammer just laterally 20 metres. Just give it to him.
Mm.
You know, kick it. So then Rammer can make the decision. Oh, I'm going to just wheel and ping that one back up on the 45.
Yeah.
Like, the good sides don't actually allow you to get that first one. They then go, what they do is they cut that out and you've got more time to come put me under pressure.
Yep.
And I have to go, dance a little bit, jam it on the boot. My key backs or my defenders all just go peel off. And then you get the score off turnover.
I think the Giants are doing a lot pretty well. The one area of the game that I feel they're not doing very well is overlap run. They've lost a lot of that in their game. Remember,
we used to be
the orange
hallmark, wasn't it? Yeah.
But now, a lot of the time, you watch the Giants and they're they're just a kick mark team. Kick mark. You don't see. And I know Zach Williams is gone. He used to do that. And Lockie Whitfield would play in a halfback for Wilson. But they've lost that bit of dash and dare, which then becomes quite easy to defend.
Yeah.
So you look who's not in the team at the moment, and you go, Cornelio, he'll do it a little bit. Perryman, probably not. Brent Daniels, probably not. They're important players, but they're not overlap runners.
Yep.
They're not getting the flow. When you overlap run,
you're shortening
the defense. You're 40 metre away players. They're moving. Mm. When you kick a mark,
it's all stationary.
It's all stationary.
Yeah. Hand up
it's
in the
all
air
stationary.
Yep.
So I think when the Giants find that again, I think they're going to be a pretty good team. They've unearthed a lot of good young players. You know, we've got to appreciate that the Giants are pretty young at the minute.
Yeah,
they're pretty young.
Yeah, the next phase for the Giants is a lot of their forwards are being the kick inside forward 50, which is okay to a point. You actually want a lot of the mids and halfbacks being that kick inside forward 50 to those forwards. Does that make sense for what I'm saying? So what's happening is the mids and halfbacks are doing that kick mark because they're receiving it backward of centre. So they're hitting up Toby Green, Himmelberg, Finlayson, and they're the ones kicking inside forward 50, which is good at different times. But you also need...
It's the opposite.
Yeah, you need Kelly, you need Ash getting the ball up through the middle of the ground.
Just forward to centre.
So we'll use Richmond again. When Richmond are absolutely flying, Bashir Hooley's getting the ball up near the logo.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so you can see if you visualise Richmond when they're flying, Jaden Short's getting the ball up near the logo. Melbourne's half-backs are getting the ball up.
Salem's up there. Yep.
Yeah. Rivers. Yeah, Hibbard before now, he's been playing the lockdown role up higher in the ground. Salem, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. So, North Melbourne.
Good.
North Melbourne. No. David Noble walks away disappointed, but chuffed that there's another layer of growth. Yeah. There's another
They left two points there.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, the Giants, I think, in the wash-up, they'll be unhappy, but Leon Cameron will sort of, I think, last night, having a quiet beer, think, geez, I'm lucky to get that 2 points.
No doubt. 28 points down. Yeah. Like, it's actually a fantastic comeback.
Yes. Six goals to one in the last quarter.
Yeah, it's a brilliant comeback from the Giants, but I think David Noble walks away a bit happier than Leon does.
And he's become a bit of a whisperer too, David Noble. Hall and Stevenson. They're actually putting some nice little...
Hall's getting that much of the footy, it's not funny.
He always can find the footy.
It'd be interesting to see how he can get some goodness out of Pollock as well, as another one of those sort of troubled players. The draw to the Giants, because their percentage is only 93, those 2 points actually could be really important to them, because I think it'll be more a win than a loss, if that makes any sense, because it just takes the percentage out. Because often we talk about the draws and should there be extra time. Well, the draw is a result.
Yeah, it is a result.
And
it's a fantastic result.
It's a fantastic result. It adds an extra dimension to the season.
I love it.
And
more of it.
I think that it's
extra
a good
time.
Thing. I just wanted to mention the Josh Kelly thing again. 39 disposals, 17 contested possessions, 654 metres gained, 8 inside 50s and 2 goals. Including 2 high quality goals, one in the second quarter,
right foot snap,
and then the right foot to kind of spark them a little bit.
Yeah.
It was almost the complete game from him, and he's had times where he's been playing in that sort of high half forward role, playing wing. He played the way that we kind of expect him to play that we haven't seen for a while.
Well, I think that high half forward role got him going.
I was going to say that at least they tried something different to get him going.
But also I think it actually broadened his thinking on football too, because playing that high half forward role, you understand ball movement coming in, you understand how to push forward, and I think that's in season, it added a layer back into his game or added on top of his game. So I think that's important because he can play mid, then he can go high half forward. So he's actually added a string to his bow this season.
A draw at Blunston Arena. The Kangaroos and the Giants share the points in round 13. We'll get to a break, quarter to eight on a Monday morning. Great to have Jimmy Bartel with us on the Monday Footy Review. He's the champ from the Cats.
An unbelievable result for us to make it, especially with our percentage. So, and we're still, you know, the quality of players we've got out, that doesn't make it easy as well. So it might not be our turn, but we've got to make sure that our expectations moving forward are, you know, pushing to the highest levels. And whether the wins this game or not, we've got to, you know, improve on that this effort tonight and last week and keep building on that.
That's the voice from Venus, of course, of Brett Ratton, the coach of St Kilda, and post-match. Well, it's a long way away, Raymond. Don't look at me like that. It sounded like it was a long, long way away. Down the line. Mercury, Venus. Uranus. I didn't want to say Uranus because that would have been...
Pluto?
Could have been...
Seen it's no longer considered.
It's no longer a planet. It's a dwarf planet.
That's correct. Yes.
Midget planet.
Yeah. You'll learn lots of things around here on the Breakfast Club. Great to have your company. Jimmy Bartel with us, Monday Footy Review. The Saints were disappointing. It's hard to say anything other than that. They kept Adelaide, as you said, Whitey, before, goalless for a quarter and a half. And they'd kicked 8-2, 3 minutes into the third term, and they didn't score another goal for the rest of the day, Jim. Fatigue, personnel-driven, system-driven, what's your take on what unfolded at Kazali Stadium on Saturday night?
Well, it has to be all of them, doesn't it? It depends what order you review it. And I feel for Brett Ratton, because we've said this with Brett Ratton and the Saints, is after they've been belted a number of times, I back you in, you do the video review, you do the mouthguard stuff, you do the rocket. It doesn't leave him many sort of tricks up his sleeve for the rest of the year, does it? Apart from, I've just got to see what personnel I've got and prepping for next year, don't you?
Well, the other bad thing for Saints fans is you can't even say, go and play the kids then, because there's none left. There's actually got no players left to play. There's a couple that haven't been played, but two or three. But
and they've recruited a lot of players for the now. Yeah. So
they've got a horrible
injury. Kids is actually contradictory to what their list setup is.
Yeah. So I was watching that game and half. I know you and I spoke over the weekend about this. Is you were sort of, if you were half time, you were trying to put yourself in Matthew Nix's shoes. How am I going to address my boys? You know, down the sheds. Because Kazali say, I'm just borrowing a bit of rugby league there down there. They're down the sheds. You're going, we're nearly historically bad here for the first half. Because if we didn't kick a goal, it was the second time in 97 years.
Yep.
We've gone goalless, scoreless for the first half. We've been historically bad.
Who was the last team to do that?
Fitzroy.
Exactly right. Round 1, 1995. Tough day.
Yeah, you would have been there.
Tough day.
You would have been there with your Doc Wielden badge on.
That was at the Witten Oval.
I kicked two against them 2 weeks later in my third game. And then I talk about,
we're getting sidetracked. But you're Matthew Nix, you're thinking, we've been so bad, but we're sort of slugging away our ball uses. We don't have to make up all the 5 or 6 goals in a row.
Yeah, eat an elephant one bite at a time, Jim.
That's it.
You can't eat the elephant in one gulp. Yeah. You might be 6 goals down, no point trying to eat it in the next 30 seconds. We've got an hour to go here. We'll sort it out over that journey.
Yeah, because they were winning some ball. I know St Kilda, we tidy up the contest. As Rama said with a few other sides, we get a bit of overlap. We try and get the ball a bit deeper. Let's see what happens here. Yeah. But then the bad thing for St Kilda is those numbers in the last quarter were horrific.
I'll give them to you, Jim.
Plus 21 Adelaide were incontestable.
23.
Two more, Daniel Fangie.
23 contested possessions more. 12 more clearances. 12 clearances.
That's enormous.
16-4. And then 20-5 inside 50s. 15 more inside 50s. That's the last quarter alone.
The 12 clearance one stands out because you've got Brad Crouch and Jack Steele still in your midfield.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were doing.
Can I just highlight one thing before, Whitey, you come off the long run? I've been to a number of Saints games, and their spread from the stoppage.
Ah, there it is.
I... I've said it nearly every time I've come away from a game. I have concerns about their spread from subbage. And I don't know, I'm not going to say they're not fit enough or anything like that. It looks like it's almost paralysis by analysis. I have to be in this position and I have to play here. So nobody actually plays football once that, you know, set play or stoppage is done. So it's like we all get the setup, but then they stay in that setup. So the ball's moved, guys.
Yeah.
You've got to move. Yeah. You have a look at that goal. Unbelievable by the... Phil Thorpe.
The last one.
Yep.
Over the head.
There's still players standing at the stoppage. Yeah. The ball has literally gone 20 metres up and gone 10 metres. How did no one touch that on the line?
Now, that was annoying watching it, I must admit. I'm
the
sure
game is on the line.
It actually bounced through.
Yeah.
And Phil Thorpe got to the line.
Yeah, he was
in the frame.
He could have kicked it again if he needed to.
And Dougal was just watching it go over his head.
But what about that decision against Howard earlier for Phil Thorpe?
Oh, no, that was
bad.
It was like the one that comes off the shoulder of the bat, just drops over the slip cord. Everyone just watches it.
No one runs.
Try and catch it.
But the game's on the line. It wasn't just Dougal's fault. But I kept watching it, rewind, watch. There's guys just who are standing at the stoppage and going, there it goes.
They're just hoping the siren's going to go.
There it goes.
There it goes.
Oh, it's bounced through.
That's a setback.
Oh no, we're going to cop some heat this week. But no, spread. Punch it through. Punch it out of bounds.
Last quarter midfield. Laird 11, Sloan 8, Keys 8, Harry Schoenberg 9. And then you look at the other side of it. Steele 5, Crouch was okay, 8, obviously, Dunstan 4.
One of the biggest pet hates I had.
That, it's hard to find who are the other mids.
I have a real issue with this, and there's ways of fixing it, obviously, but when the game was really on the balance, when St Kilda were under the pump, and they were largely for the last quarter, but when all of a sudden Adelaide got close on the scoreboard, Jack Steele and Paddy Ryder are both sitting on the bench. And they couldn't get back on because of the wind. The play a lot was on the far side of the ground and they were stuck there. Now, surely you've got to avoid that situation, even if you just put Ryder in the goal square or Steele to avoid that situation where you can't get key players back out onto the field.
I understand your point, but I reckon they look like they were cooked early in the third quarter anyway. So they, I don't know, keeping them on the ground is going to help them anyway.
But I'm talking more as a general situation because Rory Sloan got stuck on the bench at the same time Steele was on the bench. Key stoppage player for them and was very good in the second half. But it happens a lot and they get frustrated by it. But can we find a way to avoid your best players in last quarters particularly? Just like Elliot Yeo last night was only apparently meant to have 80% game time. But
they kept him on there
because we need to win the game.
Yeah.
Let's not worry about science and whatever else. Common sense has to come into play that we actually can't really afford you to go off here.
Yeah, I understand. That premise is really sound, but being involved at a level of football at the moment where science plays a fair part in it and you can measure fatigue really specifically, like, they were gone.
So why can't they go into the goal square
but they're still
and
gonna
stay
get,
there?
Can they just going to stand still and jog around? They're not going to be
at least
involved
they're on.
Or have an impact. It doesn't matter, though. They could be on, but they might be on at 60%. At least you can get somebody else on who's 73%, and you're going to get a better outcome more often than not. So you've got to play the percentages a bit. I understand your point from a premise perspective, but you've got to go with it. And they were gone midway through the third, so you had to get them off. The timing of the break is the key. Like, your best players come off through the middle of the quarter, so that doesn't happen late in the game. That's what you've got to do. Get them off for 3 or 4 minutes, middle of the quarter, and get them back on at 17, 20,
and
18
minutes. Get them off with 15 minutes to go, so they're the whole second half of the quarter.
I get them off earlier in the quarter.
Yes,
I go a big burst for five or six minutes.
Yeah. Well, then you've got to do a second one because you're not going to get through the rest of it.
You've got to hang in there. That's not how it works, mate.
The other thing is
will over science.
It's not how it works.
Bad
luck, science.
The interesting thing with St Kilda, I reckon, and it happened again on the weekend, is that it's just been left to too few. Their tail from week to week is significant, where there's just too many not contributing. So that I know they've got players that are out, but every team has got players out. St Kilda don't seem to be finding, you know, we talked about West Coast and the players that they are finding. St Kilda don't seem to be finding a lot outside Highmore that are really going, geez, this guy can really play.
I'll tell you what we've learned, though. Adelaide have got a couple. Adelaide have got a couple
now.
Yeah,
they have.
And whilst he's not a new fella, I want you to go back and watch Rory Sloane's last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
He was nothing good. Short of phenomenal. Yeah. He wasn't going to let his team lose that
he's
game.
He's a young player. Exactly.
No, I didn't say he's a young player. So,
but you know,
it's a good young player.
But this is the thing, Daniel. This often we all get, and I'm guilty of this for a variety of reasons. You get caught up in the stats. But Rory Sloane in the last 2 or 3 minutes didn't actually get a disposal, but had a major part in Adelaide
collisions,
winning.
Collisions, bumps, pushing the ball forward.
Could have got a free
kick in
the centre square. The 92-second mark to go.
And also marshalling the troops at a stoppage to make sure they're all in the right spots. All that sort of thing that he did.
Leadership.
He only had 4 possessions in the first half.
Yep.
But when the game was on the line, he really, really stood up. And it wasn't just in the disposals he got.
Rami,
I agree with you, Daniel.
Rami, you said their leadership. The impact that has on your young club, that becomes the standard. And it rubs off, and it becomes that's called your legacy piece as a senior player. That is 100% what is expected of you to play every single game out with every, you know, like you're just 100% intensity.
Yeah. You know, he's an All Australian conversation. This won't be good for Collingwood fans.
Paul Seedsman.
Correct.
He has to be.
Well, if they name wingers, he's a chance.
Yeah.
If they name midfielders on the wing, he's no chance.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are they going to name 22 in the All Australian team this year, or are they going to name 23?
A medi sub, a professional medi.
Sure, it's 22. Don't be bringing medi subs into.
Well,
the
they
Australian.
Name 23.
You actually can't get hurt.
Who's been the best? 22? Who's been the best sub for the year?
You can't get hurt.
I've actually got one for you. Waterman from the Eagles. He's been.
Daniel Rioli. Daniel Rioli's been sub a few times.
Actually, Waterman.
Imagine that.
Waterman sub, but then he was a late in for Petricelli.
No, it doesn't count. What is his sub status? There's no
All Australian as a sub.
You can't, because you can't get concussed in an All Australian name.
You might get concussed at the dinner or something like that.
If you're on Clarko's table, you might get concussed at the dinner.
Adelaide, just by the way, have won 5 games in 13.
It's the Brisbane 5 games.
If you remember when we did our final eight before the season, the ladder before the season started, the conversation amongst the four of us, who will finish on the bottom of the ladder, Adelaide or North Melbourne?
Yeah.
North Melbourne.
Who did we say?
We all said North.
Hopefully we said North.
But we all said it'd be close. Adelaide have exceeded expectations
and look like
they're on a really nice path.
If Matthew Nicks had walked into the board meeting at the start of the season saying, I reckon we can win 8 games, they would have laughed their heads off, said, out you go, please.
Yeah.
See yourself out. You're no longer the coach.
We have a statue in South Australia, Matty Nicks.
He's won 5 with 9 to go. It's a fantastic achievement. Mm. They're doing great things. It's quite a fantastic turnaround. Good for the competition, too.
What statue would it be next to? The Farmers Union?
Yeah. And the
Pie Floater?
Yeah, Pie Floater. That's what I was going to go. Yeah.
And the budget record?
The budget. Everyone loves the budget. Well done to the Crows. They were brilliant. And Phil Thorpe, this boy, he's got a bit of spunk. Playing in the ruck, too. I like the fact that he's spending a bit of time in the ruck. Yeah.
He's 200 centimetres.
He's enormous.
Yeah, but not normally the young kids don't get their chin. You're not seeing too many of the Kings fighting in the ruck too often.
Hasn't he just gone past some of those other guys that they've tried over the last couple of years? Those big guys with the blonde hair.
Himmelberg.
It's the other one. There's two. Yeah. Another one.
Frampton.
He's just gone. See you later, boys.
He's got a bit of spunk. Does Riley. Phil Thorpe. It's not easy to say. Certainly fast.
It's a mouth guard in.
Kenny Callender trying to get that one out. That's not going to work. Johnny Bowden has no troubles, though, because he's the voice of news. He pronounces everything magnificently. He's ready with the latest. We're going to be joined by Jimmy after 8 as well. He's going to stay with us.
All right.
Yeah.
We're excited about that. Time and a half.
We'll talk more footy round 13 after this.
Stay for football. We can't, you know, we'd love to get a win. And, you know, I feel like our form the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks has been building, and you know, obviously we had a good result over in Adelaide in trying circumstances. So I think one thing that we have been fairly consistent at this year is our effort. At times our skill and our execution has been poor, but I feel like that's building. And yeah, look, we'll go out there and give it a best shot, and it'd be great to send him off with a win, and that's what we'll be aiming to do.
Collingwood captain and champion Scott Penderbury talking about the game today at the SCG against the Demons, the all-conquering Demons. Nathan Buckley's last in charge. Queen's birthday, Jim.
When did he play a bad game, Scott Penderbury?
I reckon there was one.
Never happened.
1926, I think it was.
Nah.
It was a long time ago if it was. He hasn't played too many bad ones, the skipper, but he's going to need to play a good one today if there's a chance. We'll talk about that game shortly. Don't forget, after 8:30, we'll hand over to Michael Felgate on Racing Pulse, and then he in turn to Gareth Hall on RSN Central to round out your sporting racing morning on RSN 927. Let's go back, though, to Saturday afternoon, gents, to what can only be described as a largely forgettable encounter between the Fremantle Dockers and the Gold Coast Suns. Now, in the end, Fremantle won by 27 points. They got a bit tight there for a bit. midway through the third term. It was only a couple of points in favour of the home side. Gold Coast only hit the front once, I think, through the entire afternoon. But from that point in time onwards, when Rory Lobb kicked his goal at the 21-minute mark of the third term, it was basically a procession from Fremantle, and the Gold Coast had no idea what to do from there, Rimmer.
Mm. What was... Who was out for Fremantle and who was out for Gold Coast, Whitey?
Oh, Fifey.
Fremantle had 15 on their injury list. Gold Coast had 4.
Yeah,
pretty much. Give or take a couple either way.
It was. It's disappointing. It was from the Suns.
Incredibly disappointing.
It's really disappointing from the Suns.
They were really bad. Like I don't like calling teams bad, but they were really, really bad.
Actually, it's not disappointing. It's not disappointing at all. It's expected.
It is disappointing.
It's not. It's expected.
Still disappointing.
No, you're disappointed if you expect anything more than
that. You know what? I'll put
I don't
my
expect
hand
more
up
than
here.
That.
I picked Gold Coast.
So did I.
I thought they'd beat them.
I did.
If they were ever going to beat Fremantle, it was going to be on Saturday.
And they should have.
But they won't.
No, but I'm a bit like Jimmy. I look back on that and was really disappointed
in myself. There's something missing.
Did you just parent yourself?
For the Gold Coast.
Because I had a really good chat to myself on Saturday after that one.
You got the room of mirrors.
Because Rama, the reality is Gold Coast don't win those games.
They don't.
I said that Friday.
And you did.
So why are we disappointed? I'm disappointed.
You know what we should be? We should be angry. Yeah. You know why we're not angry? Because when no one's emotionally invested in Gold Coast apart from Gold Coast people.
So why are
that's where I'm getting at.
Why are we disappointed if they've just done exactly what they've done for the previous 10 years?
Because the only people that are disappointed are the ones that thought they'd win.
Because we want the competition to be strong all over the nation.
That's a different discussion. But well, I'm just talking about the weekend. Why would you be disappointed on them delivering what they delivered?
If they, Jimmy, a Victorian-based team...
Oh, that'd be an assault.
Don't go to the circus and not expect to see a clown, mate.
There'd be cameras at the car park.
Yeah.
And this isn't a Victorian team versus everyone else team. This is a team that doesn't have a history, and I think they're an artificial team that no one really cares about outside the Gold Coast.
But even though that
so
you
that's
might not
why
care about
they
that,
don't
that
get the
stop,
intensity.
That shouldn't stop them being a good team.
Correct.
No one cares. That shouldn't stop them being a good team. They've got
I'm talking about why there is no pressure on them, why there is no expectation on them, because I don't think anyone really cares.
See,
you may be right, but that shouldn't stop the fact that they are a professional football team in the number one competition on the planet, certainly in Australian rules. And their job is to be better every single year. And that they are proving to us that they cannot be that. No. And that for me is really disappointing.
No, they're proving exactly what they've proved the previous 10 years. But my frustration, and this is where I do come over to your side of the fence, is I thought this grouping of players was a different character or personality group than previous incarnations of the Gold Coasting Suns.
Yes.
Because I see Took Miller and he cares.
Well, he cares.
And I know Swallow cares. And I know this group of young players of Anderson, you know, Lukosius.
Well, Rao was back on the weekend.
Rao. But the fact that Rao is the answer after 6 games.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, like I know Ben King cares. I know Collins cares, these sort of players. So
what's missing? There's something missing.
No, there's absolutely
something missing in the Gold Coast that we say they've got all these talented players. There's something missing in their DNA as a football club.
It's winning.
But isn't it the senior core of the senior players that may have had success? But the players that they get as senior players that are recruited there are peripheral players at other clubs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get the star player that wants to go to the Gold Coast.
So Alice has had success.
Yeah, but he was a
peripheral
player.
Yeah, but I'm just going on. Who else has had success?
No, there's not too many who've had success.
Oleg Markov.
No, he never played in the flag.
Lockie Weller didn't have success, really, at Fremantle.
He didn't have success.
Hugh Greenwood played in the grand final at the Crows.
Oh, didn't that go well? For the Crows. Yeah.
No, but this is...
Zach Smith has been to Geelong.
Yeah, but he didn't play in any...
He's
been there, been involved in success. Yeah. Didn't necessarily be a part of it, but he was involved.
But they're not jumping out of trees.
Said this before, they are the Cricket Australia 11 from years ago. They're just a development
team. Maybe
they're
just
a
nice team. Maybe they're just a nice football team.
Because they're
team.
Young and they've got a lot of high draft picks that go out there and know how to kick the ball nicely, and they'll go to other clubs.
I'll throw this question. So Fremantle and Gold Coast, when you looked at that game, when you think about Fremantle, what do you think at the moment?
I'm thinking Brayshaw. I'm seeing...
No, but their style of play, who they are. what they stand for as a team.
Well, they're solid behind the ball. They're developing some grunt through the midfield, and they've just got to find maybe another option or two forward.
They're set up nicely. They're structured nicely.
But you know what they're building towards.
That's what I'm getting at. Now, so then you think of Gold Coast, and you go, well, what do they stand for as a football club? And we're all sitting there going,
hard to tell.
Yeah, scratching our head.
But when they beat Collingwood, they just played a nice brand of keepings off sort of footy that got them the win. Collingwood couldn't. They were really bad that day, but it wasn't as though you looked at Gold Coast and thought, gee, how well did they play? They were just able to play the way they want. It was just a nice sort of Saturday afternoon stroll.
I think in the end, with all those injuries, Fremantle and Justin Longmuir are pretty happy with the result.
Oh, no doubt. They're over the moon.
27 points. Ace did a good job. Brayshaw again evolving. Luke Ryan continues to impress me, I must admit.
And they're sitting one game outside the eight.
And they're one game outside the eight.
I had them in my eight.
Did you?
Yes.
Do you think there is much difference between Sam Walsh and Andrew Brayshaw as footballers?
Height.
I reckon there.
I think Brayshaw, very good football.
I think Sam Walsh is a better footballer than Brayshaw.
You reckon?
Yep.
I've got them 11 pegging.
I reckon. Oh, thanks. Oh, that's good. I reckon they're.
They're both relentless.
Oh, I reckon Brayshaw's good.
Yep. I didn't say it wasn't good.
Walsh might be a slightly better kick.
I think Walsh has added a little bit with going inside forward 50, just a touch on Brayshaw and trying to hit the scoreboard. But I'm not saying that's not in Brayshaw's game.
No.
I just think that's the next layer.
They both have an enormous appetite to work.
Yes.
Yeah. No doubt about that. They're both terrific players.
You love that as a young, watching young midfielders, they just work. They work from contest to contest. They leave the contest first, and they get to the next contest first.
Yep.
So it's just an appetite to work.
So that Chera is the interesting story for me because he hasn't committed to the football club yet, but he's so important. If it's Brayshaw, Chera, and also Sarong staying around, Chera had, I think he had 10 or 11 in the last quarter.
Yeah, 21 for the game.
Yeah, when the game was on the line, he really did lift for them in the last quarter around the ball. They'd want to keep
interesting
him.
Part, if you look at that Chera situation, David Mundy has been in sparkling form. They started David Mundy on a half-forward flank. So he sacrificed his entire game.
He did.
It looks like to almost keep Chera happy.
No, I agree with you.
Playing in the midfield.
Yep, I did think that as well.
Which is very interesting.
Yep.
And how good was big Hodor, Sean Darcy?
Yeah, who
he
needed
unbelievable.
It. Almost had his leg amputated last week and then plays like that the week after.
He's a terrific young talent, is Sean Darcy. He's really grown on me. Must admit,
he's a big thing to grow in, yeah.
He's an awesome. Get that cut out.
Freo can find the biggest ruckman in the world, can't they?
Yeah, they've got big dudes over there. Alex Pierce did a good job too, Max.
Ben
King, first time he's been kept goalless this year, I think.
So happy to see Alex Pierce back. I'm a big fan of the way he plays his footy. We just have never had the opportunity. He started, I forget, was it 2 years ago, started the first 10 rounds, and he was unbelievable. Yep. And then again, another freak accident.
Yep.
Just fingers crossed. We just see glimpses of his best footy now.
That's enough of the rubbish teams. Let's talk about the Hawks.
Mighty Fighting.
The Mighty Fighting.
Happy team at
It was clear from the very start that it was going to be Hawthorn's night, Friday night against Sydney. In the end, it was a 38-point margin. Blew out in the end, 14-5 to 7-9. I must admit, if we're talking about disappointment, I was very disappointed the way the Swans went about it. But
tired.
But the different level of contest and physicality from the Hawks, which is what we spoke about on Friday, Rammer. Remember thinking about this Friday night?
Open hand point.
Yeah, open hand point, all five fingers. Because you asked me what I wanted to see.
Yeah.
I wanted to see this contest and aggression. And that's what we got, and they got an outstanding result on the back of it.
Noticeable difference from Hawthorn on Friday night is I think they averaged, 60-odd contested marks in their back half of the ground. They had 30 on Friday night, and they took the ball forward. They had 59 inside 50s.
GF.
Yeah, they started to play with more intent to attack, and it worked.
It was amazing because 2 weeks ago on the same ground against Gold Coast, they were uncompetitive.
Yeah.
5 minutes into that game, you thought, oh, gee, Sydney are in for a real fight here.
Yeah.
Because they did look a bit tired. We talked about Sydney. Yeah. They'd beaten Carlton and St Kilda the two previous weeks and been a bit dour. They continued in that way. Hawthorn was sharper.
How unbelievable was that from John Newcombe? Nine days ago or whatever, he was taken as pick two in a mid-season draft, and then he's playing in the middle of the ground.
Yeah. 6 games ago, he's at Poo Wong.
Yeah. Playing in the middle of the ground on an
AFL. What does that
match
say for the AFL?
So you can miss a few along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Poo Wong.
12 possessions, 14 tackles. That was Grunt.
He was Bobby Boucher.
Yeah.
He was tackling fuel.
He was. He was tackling fuel.
He had more tackles than possessions on debut.
That's a good effort.
You see, we'll hopefully talk to Tom Mitchell. If it's not this week, next week.
That's if he's not getting tackled by John Newcomb.
He was a contested possession machine.
He was the animal that we remember him as at Sydney and at times at Hawthorn, not getting the cheap ball sort of round the back and all that sort of stuff. But I'll just be interested to know whether he's been spoken to about, you got to change your game, Tom. You got to get back to what you were, because that was, he was a completely different player than what we've seen in recent times.
And Segler was also.
Big Johnny Segler. Yeah. I mean, late for Ned Reeves. And 11 clearances, Big John.
Yep. 19 contested possessions he had. Maybe you should have picked him, Whitey.
The Hawks, when they play good footy half, and you go back through the years, is when they actually pinch a goal or two from out of their ruck. Yeah. And the one swapping forward. So they got one each from out of Big Boy, McAvoy, Big Boy, and Segler. And you think about
both all, really good.
Yeah, you think about all the Hawthorn sides, whether it's Hale, McAvoy, Segler, you know, you've had a host of different ruckmen. They hit the scoreboard.
Yep.
And so they got that as well. I think the Swans are a bit flat. I thought they were a bit flat against the Saints. I thought they were treading water, and it was the Saints who just was beginner's night at the driving range. Just spraying them left and right. So they were right at the picking.
Well, they have an issue now.
They've got a real issue.
Yeah, the Saints. They're next.
The Swans.
The Swans. Their next three are Port Adelaide, West Coast, Western Bulldogs.
Oh, dear.
Well, going back to my form... Not my form ladder.
Oh, don't try to be a part of this.
You've got the Whitey board. Okay, he's got the form ladder.
Form ladder doesn't work. Just teams, by the way, as an announcement, the form ladder doesn't get involved in the bye rounds because it thinks it's a joke, just like I do. The whole bye round.
Form ladder is a joke.
We wait until the bye rounds
it's
are complete.
A joke of a form ladder.
And we move forward strongly.
Back to, let's go back to Whitey's board.
Teams very rarely make the finals when they lose three games against teams that finish outside the eight. Sydney have already lost four.
Geez, he's got his yellow legal pad going on.
Oh, no.
The Whitey board's been hot.
You've just made that up.
Yeah, there's no data to back that up. Was. Yeah.
This is a gut feel thing.
You just made up a stat.
You made it up.
It made up a stat.
I'll go back on it and look at it.
Teams rarely. There's no evidence on that at all.
That's straight off the Whitey board.
You made that up.
You know what? I'm bringing an end to the Monday Footy Review because that is officially garbage. I won't have it.
It's got feel.
I won't have it.
It's disrespecting your house half.
It is. My word of this. Gee, I'm upset by that.
That's wearing the shoes into the lounge room.
8:22. I'm getting to a break. I'm not copping that. The review is over.